Anyone remember anything from yesterday's class without looking at anything? Excuse me? Yes. Why? No food. And Prithu Maharaj was angry. And what did he do in his anger? Excuse me? The earth with his bow and arrow. An empowered soul going to kill the entire earth, the predominating deity of the earth planet. Prithu Maharaj is empowered with the potency of God. And look what he's going to do. He's pointed his arrow at the earth. What do you think when you hear that? Huh? It's a story. It is an amazing story. Huh? The earth. What else? Yes. What else? What else do you think? First, before the intelligence sets in and we're supposed to, and we think, oh, this is, I better think properly. Maybe we shouldn't talk about that. Yeah. You were surprised that, I mean, she deserved the arrow. No, I didn't mean to say it in a challenging way. But there was something appropriate in Maharaj Prithu's actions. It is very difficult for us to take the lenses of our mind and see the absolute truth. And therefore, what word was used to describe the absolute truth in one of the previous verses? What was the Sanskrit name? Adhokshaja. And that means he's... Yes, one cannot understand Krishna by the powers or any powers that one possesses himself. And we say absolute truth. What is the Sanskrit word for absolute truth or words? Param Satyam. So Param Satyam means also the supreme good. So everything that he does, by definition, is good and perfect. Despite what it may seem from our perspective, within the grip of the three modes of material nature, tightly in the grip, our eyes glued shut by ignorance. What can we see? One time in Melbourne, Prabhupada sat on the Vyasasan in 1975, I believe. And he was saying something from the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam that was describing the giant eagles that fly from planet to planet and hatch their eggs through the friction of the atmosphere in outer space entering the earth. And one very, you could say bold, or you could say foolish, or you could say, I don't know what to call him. At the end of class, a disciple of Prabhupada raised his hand. I must have told this little story before. And he said, you mentioned giant eagles that fly from planet to planet. And Prabhupada was sitting so heavy and commandingly on the Vyasasana. And then the devotee said, well, it is hard to believe. And Prabhupada's reply made us, at least he made one of us, gulp. He replied very simply, what do you know? You are still within the womb of your mother. What we believe, what we disbelieve, what we think is the right way that Krishna should act, what we think is the wrong way that Krishna should act, Prithu Maharaj being violent, like this or threatening violence. Krishna pushing Arjuna to fight the battle of Kurukshetra, to kill his own kinsmen. It is difficult for the conditioned soul to accept this because we have a somewhat childish conception of God, Ishwara, Absolute Truth. And our perspective of reality is just very, very small. We are still within the womb of our mother. And what does someone within the womb of his mother know of what reality is? He doesn't even know what it's like outside the womb of his mother. What to speak of what a city is, what a country is, what a planet is, what a universe is. So this is our tiny insignificant situation. It is hard for us to accept. Why? Why is it hard for us to accept that we have so little understanding of reality? And what causes us to do that, Dr. Frog? What causes Dr. Frog to do that? Yes, but to not have any experience is one thing, but to accept one's very limited experience as the totality of reality takes incredible pride and arrogance, and which is born out of false ego. So it is really due to the huge covering of false ego that we conceive of illusion as reality. But as you said, that is all we know. So what is the solution? We have to, if we limit our knowledge to all we know, we are doomed to ignorance. And yet it is all we know. So, and we don't have the simple sanskaras in Kali Yuga to just naturally and simply accept the authority of Shastra, any authority practically speaking. We don't have that type of ability nowadays. This is the sad position of the sophisticated, sad position of the people of Kali Yuga. We challenge everything. And that challenging attitude does not, in fact, bring us happiness. It brings us neither peace nor happiness, what to speak of param gatim, the supreme goal. It just causes us, we become more and more cynical, more and more distrusting of everyone. And it is very, very sad. So we have to chant Hare Krishna, and that is the sacrifice recommended again and again. Today I was hearing a pastime of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu where he became incredibly angry when the Qazi had stopped the people from chanting. The Sankirtan movement was just beginning and all the people in Nadia were beginning to chant Krishna's names in their homes, and the Qazi heard someone and he decided he was going to stop them, and he hired people or he sent gangs around to beat anyone who was chanting and stopped the kirtan, thousands of people. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became furious and he gathered, because the Qazi said, what will your Nimai Pandit, let us see what your great teacher Nimai Pandit, what will he do? And Nimai Pandit, who was young at this time, not even 24, perhaps 22 years old, just on his calling people, how influential he was, just by his calling people, thousands and thousands and millions of people came with torches that night, and they marched, sometimes in a blissful mood and an angry mood, to the door of the Qazi. And the Chaitanya Bhagavat describes the incident somewhat differently. than Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it describes how Mahaprabhu, after they wrecked the complete gardens around the Kazi's house, they pulled up every plant. Every plant they pulled up. And there were all these people with torches. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he said, "Burn all the walls down. Set fire to every wall of his house." And the presumption was the Kazi was inside. He was so furious. This is the absolute good, the Param Satyam. But it is very frightening to be on the other side of this absolute truth when it opposes, to be in opposition to the Supreme Lord. Like Haranyakashipu, ripped apart, like Kamsa, and like every conditioned soul who is challenging Krishna. And although we prefer to have a very, very gentle, because in the West the concepts we have of God are very much formed by the culture of Christianity, of Jesus, slapped on this cheek, you turn the other cheek, or nowadays it's becoming very Buddhistical. But actually Krishna is many faceted. That is one of his facets. One of the aspects of his nature, turning the other cheek, unlimitedly tolerant, like he was with Sisupal. He was insulted so many times. But then, in this world, practically speaking, Mrityu Sava Harascham, where is the gentle, fatherly God when he is going to, in fact, kill every single person who is alive? Person, non-person, tree, frog, mosquito, tiger, elephant. Complete holocaust, complete devastation. So we should understand the perspective that we have of reality is illusion. Our perspective of reality is something is good or something is bad, within the frame of reference of 10 years or 20 years or 30 years or 50 years or 100 years. But Krishna's perspective of good and bad, and Prithu Maharaj's perspective of good and bad, and Prabhupada's perspective of good and bad was eternity. And that's an essential difference. They see from the point of view of eternity. And from the point of view of eternity, that which is wonderful from the point of view of 10 years is completely insignificant. And that which is horrible, horrendous from the point of view of 10 or 20 or 50 or 100 years is insignificant. And one life is insignificant, and Brahma's life is insignificant compared in the third canto to what? Brahma's long life is compared to of over the ocean, as a lightning flash illuminates the ocean, and it's so powerful, but it's gone within a moment, like a flash of lightning. Insignificant compared to eternity. So here we are, very tiny souls, trying to have some spiritual knowledge enter our hearts through our ears. So let us hear the pastimes of Prithu Maharaj. And as text 28, he has chastised and frightened the earth. And 28 says, At this time, Prithviraj became exactly like Yamaraj. That means like death personified. And his whole body appeared very angry. In other words, he was anger personified. Just imagine what the personification of anger, to be confronted with that, is like. That is what Hiranyakashipu was confronted with. The personification of the anger of God. Ferocity, ferociousness, anger directed against him. Terrifying. After hearing him, the planet Earth began to tremble. She surrendered, and with folded hands, she began to speak as follows. The last two lines of Prabhupada's purport. One cannot challenge the authority of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in any circumstance. Yes, I can. No, you can't. Yes, I can. It is better to surrender unto him and to take his protection at all times. The planet Earth spoke. So it's interesting that she's terrified here. And what does Prithviraj want from her? Yes. She feeds the people. And she's given so many excuses already. And Prithviraj did not accept them. He remained angry. And interestingly enough, here she's going to repeat many of the same reasons. And Prithviraj is going to remain angry because he wants something very specific from her. Her surrender has to be connected with the practical of the production of the grains. So therefore, Prabhupada always would translate bhakti as devotional service, not only devotion, but devotional service. My dear Lord, the planet Earth said, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, you are transcendental in your position, and by your material energy, you have expanded yourself in various forms and species of life through the interaction of the three modes of material nature. So this world is just an expansion of the Lord's energy. But he himself is transcendental. He is beyond this material energy. But yet, this world has to be accepted as none different from him. Unlike some other masters, you always remain in your transcendental position. This world is not different from you. It is an expansion of your energy. But you are beyond it, transcendental to it, and are not affected by the material creation, which is subject to different material interactions. So here is the first thing practically we have to learn about the Supreme, or some of the first things about the Absolute Truth. He is beyond the material world, and although in the material world we are subjected to so many material interactions, when it rains we become wet, when someone pushes us we become angry, when someone gives us some prasadam we become happy. Oh, that's not of the material world, perhaps. But we're always interacting with the material world, and that is causing so many effects. The material energy causes so many effects. But Krishna is not like us. His motivation for action is something completely different. Therefore, Kunti Devi was astounded to see Krishna's dealings as a Yadu, as a friend of Arjuna, as a friend of Yudhisthira. Because what is impelling him? So this is Janma Karma Chame Dibhyam. To understand the transcendental nature of the Lord's activities and birth is certainly wonderful. Consequently, because you are not touching the material energy, you are not trying to enjoy the material energy, you are beyond the material energy, you are not bewildered by material activities. We'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. After King Prithu gave his royal command, the planet Earth in the shape of a cow could understand that the king was a directly empowered incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Consequently, the king knew everything, past, present, and future. Thus, there was no possibility of the earth's cheating him. The earth was accused of hiding the seeds of all herbs and grains, and therefore she is preparing to explain how the seeds of these herbs and grains can be again exposed. So she will do that. The earth knew that the king was very angry with her, and she realized that unless she pacified his anger, there was no possibility of placing a positive program before him. So this was the first item on her agenda. She had to act in such a way that the Lord's anger lessened, otherwise he would not be able to hear anything from her. So how did she do that? What was the first thing she did and said? Or as Prabhupada explained in the purport, she surrendered. She stopped running, she surrendered. Therefore, in the beginning of her speech, she very humbly presents herself as a part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's body. That I too am produced of you. I am your energy. And then later on in the purport, he is completely free from the activities of the external energy. The Lord is always situated in his internal energy. Therefore, in this verse, it is stated, Sarupa Anubhavena. The Lord remains completely in his internal potency and yet has full knowledge of the external energy as well as the internal energy. What does that mean in your own words? Yes. But he is not touching the external energy at all. He doesn't touch it. But yet he knows it thoroughly, but without coming in contact with it. We know something of the external energy, but we come in contact with it. And therefore we are entangled within its complexities. But Krishna doesn't come in contact with it because he has no desire to enjoy the external energy. Looking at it on one level. And for him, of course, there is no external energy any more than for the government. There is the government doesn't see the prison department as external to itself. It's just another aspect of the government. Just as his devotee. Now listen to this very carefully, please. So the Lord stays transcendental just as a devotee remains always in a transcendental position, keeping himself in the service of the Lord without becoming attached to the material body. In that simple statement is so much. This is how to be transcendental, even in the material world. How? Non-identification with the body and always identifying with being a servant of Krishna. Srila Rupa Goswami says that the devotee who is always engaged in the devotional service of the Lord is always liberated regardless of his material situation. If it is possible for a devotee to remain transcendental, it is certainly possible for the Supreme Personality of Godhead to remain in his internal potency without being attached to the external potency. Can you do it? this is what we must learn how to do. Remain always in a serving mood with non-attachment to Krishna And here is the process, very much by hearing. Because when we're hearing the Bhagavatam, we don't know that we can't do it as soon as we stop. We forget practically because we're engaged in the internal energy. This is the potency of the Bhagavatam. We really need our consciousness to be saturated with the internal energy. Otherwise, we can't help but being saturated by the external energy, the enjoying spirit. The Lord is never bewildered by the external energy of this material world. A devotee is not hampered by the material body, although he is situated in a physical body that runs according to so many material conditions. Just as there are five kinds of air functioning within the body and so many organs, hands, legs, tongue, genitals, rectum, all working differently. The spirit soul, the living entity, who is in full knowledge of his position, is always engaged in chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, and is not connected, concerned with the bodily functions. Not concerned with how it works. Although the Lord is connected with the material world, he is always situated in his spiritual energy and is always unattached to the functions of the material world. Maya paite abhimukhe cha valajamanam. That Maya cannot stand in front of Krishna. And if we are standing always in the presence of Krishna, Maya is too shy to be present there as well. So the first thing that the earth said is, you are transcendental, I am your part. She continued, text 30, my dear Lord, you are the complete conductor of the material creation. You have created this cosmic manifestation and the three material qualities. I'm going to ask you to sum up what she's saying very concisely in one or two words, so please listen carefully. And therefore you have created me, the planet Earth, the resting place of all living entities. Yet you are always fully independent, my Lord. Now you are present before me and ready to kill me with your weapons. Let me know where I should go to take shelter, and tell me who can give me protection. Briefly, what is she saying? Yes, if you're trying to kill me, you are my creator. You are all powerful. If you're trying to kill me, where can I go for shelter? Tell me. So it is a humble statement. You are the creator of me, the planet Earth. And you are pointing your bow and arrow towards me. Where will I hide? Purport. The planet Earth herein exhibits the symptoms of full surrender before the Lord. As stated, no one can protect the person whom Krishna is prepared to kill. And no one can kill the person whom Krishna protects. Because the Lord was prepared to kill the planet Earth, there was no one to give protection to her. We are all receiving protection from the Lord, and it is therefore proper that every one of us surrender unto him. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord instructs, Savadamam Prityaja. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings, my dear Lord, whatever I have, even my body, the center of all material necessities, namely my home, my body and whatever I have in connection with this body, I now surrender unto you. What song is this? You are now completely independent to act however you like. If you like, you can kill me. And if you like, you can save me. In any case, I am your eternal servant, and you have every right to do whatever you like. 31. So she surrenders. Second text. You are the creator of me, the earth. I am surrendering unto you. 31. In the beginning of creation, you created all these moving and non-moving living entities by your inconceivable energy. Through the same energy, you are now prepared to protect the living entities. How? How is he prepared to protect the living entities? By feeding them, by killing me. You even will even feed them my body to protect them. You are the supreme protector of religious principles. Why are you so anxious to kill me, even though I am in the form of a cow? So she has already made this plea. You're protecting everyone. I am a living entity. You protect religious principles. One of the religious principles is that cows should not be killed. I'm simply amazed you are now trying to kill me. Please protect me. 32. My dear Lord, although you are one, we'll read 32 and 33 together, so listen very carefully. Although you are one, by your inconceivable potencies, you have expanded yourself in many forms. Through the agency of Brahma, you have created this universe. You are directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Those who are not sufficiently experienced cannot understand your transcendental activities because these persons are covered by your illusory energy. My dear Lord, in this way you once protect... 33. My dear Lord, by your own potencies, you are the original cause of the material elements, as well as the performing instruments, the senses, the workers of the senses, the controlling demigods, the intelligence and the ego, as well as everything else. By your energy, you manifest this entire cosmic creation, maintain it, and dissolve it. Through your energy alone, everything is sometimes manifest and sometimes non-manifest. You are therefore the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. What is the essence of that text, those texts? You're the source of all energies, yes? What else? You're the creator of all energies. But the idea is there are so many things going on in this world. There is the creation of this world. Who has actually created it? It is Lord Brahma, we'll say. But that energy, that creative energy that impels Lord Brahma, impels and empowers Lord Brahma, is Krishna. Anything that is going on in this world, whether it's in the form of creation, maintenance, or destruction, the actual force behind the nimittika karan, behind the efficient cause, the immediate cause, is Krishna. So therefore he is called Sarva Karana Karanam. So when, think about it for a second, the rain is falling. Listen to the drops. The fan is turning. What's causing the fan to turn? There's electricity. When the electricity is cut off, the fan ceases to turn. But if we trace back the dropping of the rain, the turning of the fan, the growing of the green grass, the growing of this body, the destruction of this body, the maintenance of the body, whatever it is in existence, the working of the computer, the working of the pen with the ink flowing out, if we trace everything back, anything back, everything is going on simply by the energy of Krishna. This is what the earth is saying. Just glimpse around you and see how powerful God is. And therefore Prabhupada would be so amazed when common people would be accepted as God. Just because they say I'm God, or they can produce some ash or something like that. How foolish.
just get a glimpse of how what it means, how powerful God is, how powerful Krishna is, that everything is impelled by His energy. And this is just one mama angsa tejo sambhava, just one little fraction of a portion of the totality of Krishna's inconceivable energy. This is God. So the earth is saying this. You are one. God is one. That's a common phrase that we hear. God is one. What does it mean? It doesn't quite work in English. God is one. What does it mean?
I'm God also. I'm God also.
You?
Well, that's what they say.
Never mind what they say. But what does it mean? God is one. Huh? Without a second, He is the absolute truth. But what does it mean? It's such a phrase that's hard to figure out what it means. Yeah. Yes, everything. Nothing is different from, there is only one absolute ultimate source. It's not that there can be two gods, Asama Udha. No one is equal, no one is greater than Him. There is nothing separate from Him. There is a source of everything. And that there is one source, not multiple sources. Janmadyasyataha. The absolute truth is that which everything emanates, everything. Nothing is external to it. So the earth is saying this. Prabhupada's purport to 32, God is one, but He expands Himself in a variety of energies. So He is nothing is different from Him, yet He is different from everything. This is Achintya Shakti. The material energy expands Himself into the spiritual energy, the marginal energy, and so forth. Unless one is favored and especially endowed with grace. What does grace mean?
Mercy.
He cannot understand how the one Supreme Personality of Godhead acts through His different energies. The living entities are also the marginal energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Brahma is also one of the living entities, but He's especially empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although Brahma is supposed to be the creator of this universe, actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead is its ultimate creator. In this verse, the word mayaya is significant. Maya means energy. Lord Brahma is not the energetic, but is one of the manifestations of the Lord's marginal energy. In other words, Lord Brahma is only an instrument. Everyone, every cause in this world is an instrumental cause. It is an instrument in the hands of the Lord. Just like if I hit this piece of wood with this post-it, this paper. What is hitting the wood? The instrument is just the paper. So if someone says, you hit the wood, the desk. And no, I didn't. The paper hit it. It's true that the paper hit it, but the paper is instrument to my desire. So I cannot say that I did not hit it. So everything that causes anything in this world is simply the instrumental cause, and Krishna is the sarva-karana karanam. In other words, Brahma is only an instrument. Although sometimes plans appear contradictory, there is a definite plan behind all action. One who is experienced and is favored by the Lord can understand that everything is being done according to the Lord's supreme plan. Nothing can escape from being instrumental to Krishna's plan. Very reassuring. Prabhupada's purport to 33. Interesting purport. All activities begin with the creation of the total energy, the Mahatattva. Oh, Is that the right one? That wasn't the one I was thinking of. But anyway, okay. Interesting anyway. Then by the agitation of the three gunas, the physical elements are created as well as the mind, ego, and controllers of the senses. Where is this described in detail? Third canto in many places. Yeah, and also earlier. All of these are created one after another by the inconceivable energy of the Lord. In modern electronics, a mechanic may, by pushing only one button, set off an electronic chain reaction by which so many actions are carried out one after another. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead pushes the button of creation, and different energies create the material elements and various controllers of the material physical elements, and their subsequent interactions follow the inconceivable plan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, 34 and 35 we'll also read together. The earth is putting forward more of her plea. My dear Lord, you are always unborn. Everything in this material world is born, but you are unborn, always. Once in the form of the original boar, you rescued me from the waters in the bottom of the universe. Through your own energy, you created all the physical elements, the senses and the heart for the maintenance of the world. My dear Lord, in this way you once protected me by rescuing me from the water, and consequently your name has been famous as Dharadhara, he who holds the planet Earth. Yet, at the present moment, in the form of a great hero, you're about to kill me with your sharpened arrows. I am, however, just like a boat on the water, keeping everything afloat. My dear Lord, this is the final text in this chapter and the final text perhaps that we shall read today. I am also the creation of one of your energies, composed of the three modes of material nature. Consequently, I am bewildered by your activities. You saved me as the boar, and now you're killing me as Prithu Maharaj? I'm bewildered by your activities. Even the activities of your devotees cannot be understood, and what to speak of your pastimes. Thus everything appears to us to be contradictory and wonderful. She is not faulting him, but she is saying, I cannot understand why you are acting in this way. But she's already said this. Purport. Here is, in the last paragraph of this purport, was that part that I thought was interesting, that reiterates a point that Prabhupada made about the plan of the Lord. But please listen. The activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in its various forms and incarnations are always uncommon and wonderful. It is not possible for a tiny human being to estimate the purpose and plans of such activities. Therefore, Srila Jiva Goswami has said that unless the Lord's activities are accepted as inconceivable, they cannot be explained. The Lord is eternally existing as Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead in Goloka Vrindavan. He has also simultaneously expanded himself in innumerable forms, beginning with Lord Rama, Lord Nrisimha, Lord Varaha, and all the incarnations coming directly from Shankarshan. That means the Purusha avatars. Shankarshan is the expansion of Baladeva, and Baladeva is the first manifestation of Krishna. Therefore, all these incarnations are known as Kala. The word Ishvaranam refers to all the personalities of Godhead. In other words, it's a plural form of Ishvara. As stated in Brahma Samhita, Ramadi Murtishu Kala Niyamena Tishtan. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is confirmed that all the incarnations are partial expansions, or Kala, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should not take the plural number of the word Ishwaranam to mean that there are many Godheads. The fact is that God is one. There is one original source, and that is Krishna. Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. The fact is that God is one, but He exists eternally and expands Himself in innumerable forms and acts in various ways. Sometimes the common man is bewildered by all this and considers such activities contradictory, but they are not contradictory. There is a great plan behind all of the Lord's activities. For our understanding, it is sometimes said that the Lord is situated in the heart of a thief as well as in the heart of the householder. But the supersoul in the heart of the thief dictates, go and steal things from that particular house. And at the same time, the Lord tells the householder, now be careful of thieves and burglars. These instructions to different persons appear contradictory, yet we should know that the supersoul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has some plan. And we should not consider such activities contradictory. The best course is to surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead wholeheartedly, and being protected by Him, remain peaceful. Now explain those last lines of Prabhupada, the best course. What is that? What is he saying in relationship to everything else he said in this purport? We cannot understand that. We may think we understand, but we cannot act. And that is very hard to accept. At least for me. Yes, continue.
So, when we cannot understand, we should just surrender to the Lord and understand.
Since we don't understand, we should surrender to the Lord. And what does that mean? That surrender to Him. What does that surrender mean?
Accept that He has His plan, and His plan is the best.
And we should take our plan and dovetail it with His plan. That is surrender, and place ourselves under His protection. Rakshishyatitivishvasa gotripte varanam tata. We should place ourselves under His protection and make our plan, our planning, to be in harmony with His plan. Not that we should make His plan, oh God, give me this, and 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 give me that. Make your plan harmonious with my plan. But do we really know what is best for us? That our plan for us is better than Krishna's plan for us? So this stage of Sharanagati, or surrender to Krishna, is bhakti. This is where bhakti actually begins. And when someone is a surrendered devotee, that whatever he gives to Krishna, Krishna will accept that. That's devotional service. What's the verse in that? Maybe the 15th chapter that ends, Sarva Bhavena Bharata. Surrender unto Him in all respects. All respects. That means all respects. What's the beginning of that verse? Perhaps the next to last verse in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. In the discussion of there are two types of living entities, two types of jivas, and then there's the Uttama Purusha Tvanya. But there's another one. Yomam evam asambhudo purusha purushottava janati purushottava, knowing me to be the purusha uttama, the topmost person, sasava vid bhajante mam sava bhavena bharata. Knowing me as such, such a person surrenders to me in all respects. This iti guyattamam shastram, this is the secret of all shastra. Confidential truth of all shastra. And he who knows this, he becomes wise and endeavors attain, reach perfection. And then this also is, this is a summary of the Vedanta Sutra. These verses right there. So the earth has presented herself again. You are the supreme. I can't understand why you're so angry at me, although you have the right to do anything. You protected me previously. Your activities are contradictory. They appear contradictory, even though you have your plan. So is Prita Maharaj satisfied with these words? No. So in text 1 of chapter 18, the great sage Maitreya continued to address Vidura. My dear Vidura, at that time, after the planet Earth finished her prayers, King Prithu was still not pacified, and his lips trembled in great anger. Although the planet Earth was frightened, she made up her mind and began to speak as follows in order to convince the king. Ooh. My dear Lord, please pacify your anger completely and hear patiently whatever I submit to you, before you. Please turn your kind attention to this. I may be very poor, but a learned man takes the essence of knowledge from all places, just as a bumblebee collects honey from each and every flower. Now she's going to describe what she wants to tell him. To benefit all human society, not only in this life, but in the next, the great seers and sages have prescribed various methods conducive to the prosperity of the people in general. So she's going to explain why there are no grains, and then she's going to present her solution, how to produce the grains, and Prithu Maharaj is going to be satisfied. So first she's saying the sages have made methodologies, technologies, systems to produce prosperity for the people in general. One who follows the principles and instructions enjoined by the great sages of the past can utilize these instructions for practical purposes. Such a person can very easily enjoy life and pleasures if he follows the instructions of the great sages. A foolish person who manufactures his own ways and means through mental speculation and does not recognize the authority of the sages who laid down unimpeachable directions is simply unsuccessful again and again in his attempts. So the people who follow the injunctions of the sages, the shastric injunctions, they're happy, they're prosperous, they attain good results, and those who whimsically follow their own mental speculations, they're unsuccessful in their attempts. My dear king, the seeds, roots, herbs, and grains which were created by Brahma in the past are now being used by non-devotees who are devoid of all spiritual understanding. In other words, they're being used by those persons who are not following the shastric injunctions of sacrifice. They're being used whimsically, for the people are trying to act for their own pleasure and they're not being successful. It's not working. My dear king, not only are the grains and herbs being used by non-devotees, but as far as I am concerned, I am not properly being maintained. Indeed, I am being neglected by kings who are not punishing these rascals who have turned into thieves by using grains for sense gratification. So not only are there rogues and thieves
who are doing everything whimsically and selfishly. The king is not protecting me by stopping them from their whimsical actions. And therefore, consequently, I have hidden all these seeds which were meant for the performance of sacrifice. And due to being stuck for a very long time, all the grain seeds within me have certainly deteriorated because I'm not giving them forth. Why should I allow these rascals and thieves to exploit the earth and exploit me? And the grains, because this is not the purpose for what they are created for. So they're in me, they are deteriorating. Therefore, you should immediately arrange to take these seeds. Seeds and grains are basically the same. Seeds are grains, all grains are seeds. But grains are differentiated from seeds as that they are being used for food. But grains are basically seeds. So you should immediately arrange to take these seeds out by the standard process which is recommended by the Acharyas or the Shastras. O great hero, protector of living entities, if you desire to relieve the living entities by supplying them sufficient grain, and if you desire to nourish them by taking milk from me, you should make arrangements to bring a calf suitable for this purpose and a pot in which the milk can be kept, as well as a milkman to do the work. Since I will be very much affectionate towards my calf, your desire to take milk from me will be fulfilled. So the chapter will go on, but we'll stop here. And tomorrow we'll summarize that again. So she's saying this is the methodology by which your purposes can be fulfilled. And here were my reasons. They were good reasons. Questions, comments? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Because the earth wasn't cooperative, it appeared. She was withholding. So now she was withholding the grains because the cow, she's in the form of a cow, and the cow has to drop the milk into the milk bag before it can be milked. She can be milked. So similarly, it appears that the earth has to do something by her own volition. She can hold back things and she can give them by her own volition too, make plentiful production. So she explained her reasons right now why she had been holding back, but now she's ready to move forward and Prithu Maharaj will relax his bow and arrows. Does that answer? It seems that she's suggesting that which will facilitate her ability to do as he desires, which is legitimate. In other words, if I say, Sankirtan Prabhu, please do this, this, and this for me. Mm-hmm. And you say, I can do that, but I need this and this assistance to be able to do it. I need a certain, and then I'll be able to do it. And if they're reasonable requests, then those facilities are given. And Prithu Maharaj is going to do that. But this happens so many times in the Bhagavatam. Sometimes Lord Shiva is praised as the Lord, and sometimes Brahma is praised as the Lord. And when that's done, they're praising the Lord Shakti who is acting through him. So they're praising the Lord, and the receptacle of that Shakti is the receptacle of the Shakti. So Krishna is actually being praised. He is the ultimate object of all praise. But what do we learn from his actions? First, they were strong. Undoubtedly, they were strong. Undoubtedly, they were strong. He was determined to do what was ever necessary to feed the citizens. So we learn from that one of the prime duties of the king is just that, to do whatever is necessary to make sure the citizens are well fed, have enough food. And then the earth, naturally, she came forward with her a system.
But he wasn't going to take any excuses at all. Not even that the earth is like a boat and everyone is resting on this boat and you will have no place to stand, nor will the citizens. Nor would he accept the excuse that you previously protected me and now you're threatening to kill me. No, he wanted a practical solution to the problem, and she was ready to give that. So one could say, why didn't she just say that in the beginning? Why didn't she just cooperate? I should ask Mother Earth. Huh? You would have preferred that one, maybe. But then we would have missed all the excitement and action. Why? That's one of the points that's being made. Why things happen the way they happen. Sometimes Krishna's plan seems to work in a very crooked way. And we think that why it would have been easier if he would have done this and this and this. But there is some arrogance on our part in that, because we're presuming that we know better than him as a better way. If he would have only listened to my advice, things would be organized a lot better. This is a tendency, you know, I'm saying it in a silly way in one sense, make us feel silly, but there's a tendency of conditioned souls to think like this. But clearly, and Prabhupada pushes the point that there's a plan. We may not be able to understand the plan. So here by Prithu Maharaj doing it in this way and the earth reciprocating in that way, we're hearing about Prithu Maharaj and what the qualities of a king are like. Well, hardly ever. Well, yes, it never ultimately it makes sense because that's what happens. And that's the sense of it. You don't find out the purpose of everything often until years and years and years and years and years. Just like when you were young, perhaps, you did this and you were doing that and you were running around doing this and this and that. But there was a part of you that was looking for something. But you didn't find out what you were looking for until years and years and years and years and years after you did the thing that you did. That's my experience. So we can say, yes, we can find out. But it's up to Krishna when we find out, if we find out. Sometimes the actual reason why something occurs may not come to its fructification for 10,000 years. Who knows? But if you want to, I mean, if you have that kind of mind, I know that I can't stop trying to figure it out. But ultimately we have to accept that this is Brahma's conclusion in the third canto. Ultimately, all we can do is offer our obeisances to the inconceivable Lord. Yeah? Now let's finish this. Very often we don't understand even the purpose of our life until we're about to die, something like that. You know, what was impelling you and pushing you your whole life? It appeared to be aimless. It appears to be aimless. That's what I'm saying, but actually it's not aimless. You're being pushed, impelled. At least I have that experience before I... And when I started chanting Hare Krishna, immediately I understood that this is what I had been looking for. And my first thought was, wouldn't it be my luck, I got a religion. That's what I was looking for. I wanted some meditation or something and ended up with a religion. That's actually what I... But I knew, even while thinking that consciously, I knew that this was what I was meant to do. I knew it, but especially because of the potency of the Hare Krishna mantra. And also, you look in the Puranas, and there's a certain person takes his birth in a particular way, like we heard about, who was it? That was, who was it? Vena. Vena got, was cursed. So why we act, the wise may have their seed 1,000 lives ago. The seed of why we're doing, why something is happening to us now, maybe have been planted 1,000 lives ago. How many years ago was that? Or may have been 10 lives ago. So how can we understand? So we can spend our life trying to understand. Or, and then, Jnanamamam prapadyante vasudeva savamiti samahatma sadolava. That the wise person, he just takes shelter of Krishna. Saying everything, ultimately, the ultimate cause of everything is vasudeva savamiti. It's difficult to accept that we're tiny and insignificant. At least I have a hard time accepting it. In me, why does it take? I also ask the same question, but other people seem to fructify a lot quicker. Means that in previous lives, there has to be some very good fortune, which comes from good association very much. And it's a progression, it's built up until one... Some people, as soon as they come, they immediately take to Krishna consciousness very powerfully. And then, sometimes those same people later on hit core issues of their, that are keeping them in the material world, and then they have to deal with those. Like the peeling of an onion, with so many layers, until we get to what the real issue is. The real issue ultimately is, am I going to give myself to Krishna, sava bhavena bharata, and become a devoted to Him, or do I have some other thing that is pulling my devotion? But as the example of Katvanga Maharaj illustrates, that it can happen in a half a moment. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling in South India, his internal energy was independently bestowing itself upon so many living entities, countless living entities. Yes, it would seem that way. But just imagine if you knew everything that you are being punished and rewarded for, and you remembering it for the last 10,000 births, all at the same time. It would be interesting, you would short circuit, it would be impossible. It would be, if you had to relive, say if you are sick today, and you remember something that you did to someone last life, that caused them some misery, and you're getting that. So you have to experience that pain of what you did. And then you have to experience the pain of that, and the pain of that, and the pain of that. And while you're getting the pleasure of that, and the pleasure of that. So if you had that compressed thousands of years, what to speak of thousands of births, compressed into your consciousness right now, how would you be alive? And not only that, how would you develop love? You would just be a ball of reactions, of karma up there. But there is freedom, because we don't remember. There is a clarity that allows us to give ourselves to Krishna without being just forced to give ourselves, as if we were some conditioned rat by Pavlov. Dogs, he worked with dogs, excuse me. But I also wondered, that's my answer to that question. It would be intolerable.
Then you could say, well, why doesn't Krishna just let us remember last life? So we could... But, huh?
It wouldn't make sense, because the last life also...
Yeah. It's all or nothing, Prabhu. There are people, somehow I was in an airport and I picked up a book by an American general, who was a big general, World War II or something. And he remembered not everything that had happened to him, but he remembered that birth after birth after birth after birth, he was a warrior fighting evil. And he remembered this, and this is what he wanted to do. He just wanted to be involved in one war after another, fighting evil. That's a very specific, that gave me a glimpse of what these Kshatriyas were like. They loved it. Now we're just, our consciousness is all hodgepodge. But these people, they were fearless because they had that type of knowledge. And they didn't want anything else practically. They wanted to fight. And the Brahmins, they just wanted to know and learn. And the Vaishyas, they wanted to make a little money. he wanted the ISKCON to be the kind of society that could advise the world as what to the purpose of life was, through knowledge. That's what he desired, that we would come to a high platform. And by the power of our surrender to his desire, and by the power of the holy names and determination, that we would be able to minimize, and by the higher taste, be able to minimize the other parts of our nature. But the other parts of our nature seem to be very determined to exert themselves. But if you ask why did he want that, what did he want, that's what he wanted. But there were two different things. He wanted to first create Brahmins. But then, especially when the devotees had a difficult time maintaining a Brahminical standard, then you wanted Vanashrama. Because we proved somewhat incapable. When there are no trees, even the castor tree appears to be big. And later, we'll see that there's another dealing with the earth. And it's very loving. But as you can push and push and push and push and push, and at some point, you come up with, I can't understand this. If you can figure it out, yes, not that you can't understand anything. Especially if you have that nature, you can use it in Krishna service and study Shastra and try to understand the whys and the. But I personally, I can say for myself that I have that tendency very strongly. And there are certain issues that I've just pushed my brain against and pushed my brain against and pushed. And the more I push, the less I understand. And it's very frustrating for me because it's my nature to understand. So then you have to decide, depending on what the issue is, whether you want to be a theist or an atheist. Do you accept the way Krishna does it? Or you accept that it's such a bad thing that he's done that I don't believe? And that's the point, actually, where that Western theology never seems to go beyond. How could this world be so rotten and there be an all-good Supreme Personality of Godhead
They never seem to actually get beyond that question. Or there's the problem of pain and the problem of evil. Same problem. What's his name who wrote that?
C.S.
Lewis. Yeah, I've read it. Okay. This class is dismissed as we go into the greater classroom of life.
Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Maharaj Prithu ki jai. Lord Nrisingadev ki jai.